Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Silvercrest Asset Management Group Inc. fourth quarter and year-end 2014 earnings call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. Before we begin, let me remind you that during today's call, Silvercrest will make forward-looking statements pursuant to the safe harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. All statements other than statements of historical facts, including statements regarding future events and developments in Silvercrest's future performance, as well as management's current expectations, beliefs, plans, estimates, or projections relating to the future, are forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements are only predictions based on current expectations and projections about future events. These forward-looking statements are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties, and there are important factors that could cause actual results, level of activity, performance, or achievements to differ materially from the statements made. Among these factors are fluctuations in quarterly and annual results, incurrence of net losses, adverse effects of management focusing on implementation of a growth strategy, failure to develop and maintain the Silvercrest brand, and other factors disclosed in the company's filings with the SEC, including those factors listed under the caption entitled Risk Factors in the company's annual report on Form 10-K for the year ended December 31st, 2013, filed with the SEC. In some cases, these statements can be identified by forward-looking words such as believe, expect, anticipate, plan, estimate, likely, may, will, could, continue, project, predict, goal, the negative or plural of these words, and other similar expressions. These forward-looking statements are predictions based on Silvercrest's current expectations and its projections about future events. All forward-looking statements made on this call are made as of the date as of hereof, and Silvercrest assumes no obligation to update these forward-looking statements. Now I'd like to turn the call over to Rick Hough, CEO. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Silvercrest successfully obtained meaningful new assets, contributing to the firm's organic growth for the fourth quarter ending December 31st, 2014, along with increased revenue. Our fourth quarter represented the sixth straight quarter of positive organic growth generated by our new ultra-high net worth and institutional business, and is actually the 11th out of 12 quarters with positive organic flows to the firm. The firm's relationships importantly increased to 538 as of December 31st, 2014, up from 483 as of December 31st, 2013. The firm's total assets under management increased to $17.9 billion as of year-end, from $16.4 billion as of the third quarter of 2014, and up from $15.7 billion as of year-end 2013. Of that, total discretionary assets under management, which you may recall drive revenue, grew to $11.6 billion as of December 31st, 2014, from $10.1 billion as of December 31st, 2013. We're quite pleased with the execution of our firm's business strategy, including the pace of continued organic growth in our high net worth business, strong institutional asset management growth, and increased visibility of the firm's prestigious brand. With that, I'll turn the financials over to Scott, and then we'll be taking questions.
Thanks, Rick. As you may have read in our earnings release for the fourth quarter and year-end, discretionary AUM as of December 31st, 2014, just to emphasize, was $11.6 billion, and total AUM as of December 31st, 2014, was $17.9 billion. Revenue for the quarter was $17.7 million, and reported consolidated net income for the quarter was $2.7 million. Again, as a reminder, please keep in mind that the results of operations and cash flows for the year ended December 31st, 2013, include those results of operations and cash flows of our accounting predecessor, Silvercrest LP. Commencing with the third quarter of 2013, we began reporting earnings attributable to Silvercrest Asset Management Group Inc., which represents our Class A shareholders. Also commencing with the third quarter of 2013, we began reflecting partner incentive payment accruals as compensation expense. Historically, these incentive payments were recorded as distributions when paid. Looking at the quarter, again, revenue for the quarter was $17.7 million, representing approximately a 3% increase over revenue of $17.2 million for the same period last year. This increase was driven primarily by growth in our management and advisory fees as a result of increased AUM. Expenses for the fourth quarter were $14.9 million, representing approximately a 3% decrease from expenses of $15.4 million for the same period last year. This decrease was primarily attributable to decreases in general and administrative expenses of $0.6 million. G&A decreased primarily because in the fourth quarter of 2013, a charge was taken for payments to be made to a relative of our former CEO. Reported consolidated net income was $2.7 million for the quarter as compared to $4 million in the same period last year. Reported net income attributable to Silvercrest or the Class A shareholders for the fourth quarter of this year was $1.1 million or 15 cents per basic and diluted Class A share. Adjusted EBITDA, which we define as EBITDA without giving effect to equity-based compensation expense and other non-recurring items, but inclusive of the effect of partner incentive payments, was approximately $5.8 million or 32.5% of revenue for the fourth quarter compared to $4.5 million or 26.3% of revenue for the same period last year, meaning 2013. Adjusted net income, which we define as net income without giving effect to non-recurring items but inclusive of the effect of partner incentive payments and income tax expense, assuming a corporate tax rate of 40%, was $3.1 million for the quarter or 25 cents per adjusted basic and diluted share. Adjusted earnings per share is equal to adjusted net income divided by the actual Class A and Class B shares outstanding as of the end of the reporting period for basic adjusted EPS, and to the extent dilutive, we add unvested deferred equity units and performance units to the total shares outstanding to compute diluted adjusted EPS. Looking at the year, revenue for 2014 was $69.5 million, representing approximately a 16% increase over revenue of $60.1 million for the same period last year. Again, this increase was also driven primarily by growth in our management and advisory fees as a result of increased AUM. Expenses for the year ended December 31st, 2014 were $54.2 million, representing approximately a 24% increase over expenses of $43.5 million for the same period last year. This increase was primarily attributable to increases in comp and benefits expense of $10 million and increases in G&A expenses of $0.7 million. Again, the increase in comp and benefits expense as for 2014 compared to 13 is primarily as a result of the recognition of partner incentive payments as expense upon the commencement of our IPO. G&A expenses increased primarily as a result of increased occupancy expense due to a reduction in subtenant rental income and an increase to the provision for doubtful accounts because of higher revenue levels. We increased our reserve. Reported net income was $10.7 million for the year ended December 31st, 2014, as compared to $17.2 million in the same period last year. Reported net income attributable to Silvercrest or to Class A shareholders for the year ended December 31st, 2014 was $4.8 million, or 63 cents per basic and diluted share. Adjusted EBITDA was $21.1 million or 30.4% of revenue for 2014 compared to $17.3 million or 28.8% of revenue for 2013. Adjusted net income was $10.7 million for the year ended December 31st, 2014 or 87 cents per basic adjusted EPS and 86 cents per adjusted diluted EPS. Looking at the balance sheet, total assets were $99.7 million as of December 31st, 2014, compared to $100.7 million as of December 31st, 2013. Cash and cash equivalents were $30.8 million at the end of 2014, compared to $27.1 million at the end of 2013. Notes payable was $4.1 million at the end of 2014 and $8.3 million at the end of 2013. Just to note, as of December 31st, 2014, we paid off our revolving credit balance of $3 million with City National Bank. As of the end of 2013, we had $3 million outstanding on this facility. Total stockholders' equity was $42.5 million at the end of 2014. And with that, that concludes my remarks. I'll turn it back over to Rick for Q&A.
Thanks very much. We'll be prepared to take questions at this time.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press star, then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Our first question comes from Michael Kim with Sandler O'Neill. Your line is open.
Good morning, Michael.
Hey, Rick. Good morning. I think last quarter you talked about the flows being a bit more skewed towards the high net worth business, just given maybe some rebalancing that that impacted the cash flows on the institutional side. So just curious if you could talk a bit about the underlying mix this quarter and sort of any potential impact from lingering rebalancing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did mention that we expected more rebalancing at that time, and we expected more in the fourth quarter. It's important to note, of course, rebalancing is due to very good performance. So you don't like to see it, but on the other hand, you'd much rather have good investment performance and suffer that rebalancing. Actually, the institutional assets did see more rebalancing. I think it was on the order of 20-some-odd million. However, of course, we won other mandates or additional funds. In fact, we saw new contributions into our mutual fund of about $10 million during the quarter. And I think the negative on the institutional side was only about $6 million. So, you know, a very, very small rounding error. During the quarter, we had performance, as you would expect, that contributed, and overall institutional and sub-advisory assets actually increased $150 million as a result of that. So really very little movement on the institutional side, but that is a result of some outflows.
Got it. And then maybe just to follow up on the institutional business, any comments or color in terms of what you're seeing on the RFP side or win rates or sort of allocation trends more broadly, and the uptake for some of your strategies beyond the small cap product, or you know, you mentioned the sub advisory side as well.
Absolutely. So and thank you for mentioning the sub advisory side. I think we mentioned, certainly in the third quarter call, I may have mentioned it in the second quarter call, that we were increasingly looking for sub-advisory relationships because those are pools of assets that have the potential to continue growing at a meaningful pace as opposed to placed mandates, which are more likely to be static and even potentially rebalance as you have good performance, as we've experienced. The pipeline is growing for sub-advisory relationships. And the pipeline is also growing for RFPs in terms of other mandates. In fact, it has grown since the fourth quarter, and I think the pipeline that we are in position to potentially win, if you were to win at all, which is, of course, never going to happen, is several hundred million as of a few weeks ago, and it's well into over $1 billion, closing in on $2 billion more recently. So that pipeline has really filled up. I haven't given those numbers before, so it's hard for you perhaps to compare it to our pipeline previously. I would say it's larger than our previous pipeline, which is very good. And given the continued performance of our capabilities and our relationship in the marketplace now that's well established, I think we've doubled institutional assets over the past couple of years. We're going to get a good share of that. So we're excited about the possibilities in that business.
Okay, just to clarify, that the $2 billion number that you just mentioned,
I said between 1 and 2, shading towards 2. That's kind of an actionable potential pipeline if you were to win it all.
Gotcha.
Which isn't going to happen.
Yep.
But it gives you some idea of the number of searches that we're potentially in over time. And I'm not going to give that number regularly. I just happen to know it right now. What I will tell, as I have each quarter, is whether the pipeline looks robust and how it compares to the past. And this is very robust.
Understood. And then maybe just to frame the potential impact, any sense of historical win rates as you think about in the context of that pipeline?
I'm not going to give a historical win rate for that pipeline. Our win rates are very good, but that would require granularity I don't have into the full pipeline.
Okay, fair enough. Then maybe just a couple for Scott. It looks like the fee rate moved a bit lower this quarter. Can you just maybe talk about some of the dynamics that drove that and sort of the outlook going forward?
Well, I think just to confirm with you that if you look at our true, you know, discretionary AUM, our fee rate, the needle really doesn't move much from that perspective. If you're looking at total AUM, which has a fair amount of non-discretionary, which we know doesn't drive revenue because of the mostly flat fee nature and, you know, uncorrelated revenue vis-a-vis AUM. So I'm not quite sure which metric you're looking at there, but on the discretionary side, the needle really has not moved.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking at the discretionary, and you know, maybe it's more of a rounding error, but we can take that offline. I guess final
Michael,
question.
Michael, this is Rick. Sorry to interrupt. One item that you should probably keep in mind with regards to that number is you may recall that we opened an office in Richmond, Virginia, which we're ramping up, and you know, we've gotten good flows as you would expect from that. From that action, and they have slightly a different business model in some parts of their business. It's a high net worth business, but they have institutional consulting relationships like 1060. And as they ramp up, you know, there may be some movement in the fee basis that's affecting things a bit. But from our perspective, we're not, from a business overall business perspective, we're not seeing fee compression. We're still going into the market and being able to hold on to the fee-free requests from clients.
Understood. And then just lastly, any updates on plans to potentially grant equity awards and how that might impact sort of the outlook for compensation expense and margins more broadly?
Yeah, as far as the 2012 equity incentive plan, we're in the midst of evaluating, you know, the most appropriate way to formally implement that plan. So at this point in time, I really can't provide any more color than that.
I will say we do intend to make meaningful grants this year. My partners, including myself and Scott and others, know that that plan is there to compensate us for a job well done. We feel like we have executed on our strategy in a number of areas and done so well with very smooth growth compared to our peers. And given that we have not made those awards and they've been out there for 2 years and they're expected to last, you know, 4 or 5 years when we were on the road, we would expect to make an allocation. We're going to do so in a way that looks after all shareholders, after all we are as well in terms of their impact on earnings. But I would expect to see them come out, and they're going to come out you know, sooner rather than later. Let me put it that way.
Got it. Thanks for taking all my questions.
Sure, no problem.
Thank you. And again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Have a follow-up from Michael Kim with Sandler O'Neill. Your line is open.
Hi, Michael.
Hey guys.
Have a nice conversation.
jump back in a couple more. I guess I think typically there's a bit of a seasonal step up in G&A expense in the fourth quarter. So just wondering if there was sort of that same impact this time around, and just give maybe some color on the outlook going forward.
Yeah, no, the our G&A was, certainly if you compare it a quarter year over a year, G&A went down. So even if you carve out charge we took a little bit north of $700,000 in the fourth quarter of last year, our G&A remained fairly consistent. So, and I think also our G&A now, because we're quite a distance from the closing of the IPO, is reflecting pretty much our steady state. Not to say there wouldn't be some lumpiness to the extent there's an initiative or investment that we make, whether it be non-compensatory or compensatory, but it's pretty reflective. We didn't have that many adjustments also in arriving at adjusted EBITDA as well. So,
right.
So, okay. Michael, this is Rick, of course. A conversation is always better than questions, and I have a few things on my mind as a result of 2014 being put to bed. From our perspective, we told the market a year and a half ago, we came out in June of 2013, that we would execute a strategy based on four things: continued growth in the high net worth business, growth in the institutional business, acquisition, whether that's talent acquisition or other enterprises in new geographies, and fourth, building of our prestigious brand and visibility. I think our brand visibility, its role in the marketplace, the firm's visibility to peers as well as our high net worth audience, certainly in the institutional market, has undoubtedly grown. Almost no matter how you look at it, we're in more searches, consultants are more aware of us, we're in more media mentions and appearances, our own website traffic is higher, et cetera. And I'm increasingly invited to industry events to present to other firms and talk about the business, which I take also as a sign of the firm's visibility from our peers. I think that's going well. High net worth business has grown steadily. It's contributed at least half our growth. We have had very few bumps compared to comparable firms in the marketplace, and I foresee steady growth. The growth organically has been smoother than usual. I've always warned, wow, it's another quarter where we're contributing organic growth, and it's usually much lumpier just because of the nature of those relationships. And as you well know, second quarter, often our clients have to pay taxes, for example, so there's always going to be a drag around that time. Otherwise, it's hard to predict what's going to happen in what quarter. Institutional business has grown substantially, and the pipeline remains robust. We're very proud of what we've accomplished as a company. The third piece, acquisition piece, I've talked about in past calls and haven't mentioned in this one. We've opened a Richmond office and acquired talent there. That's proceeding well in the marketplace and continues to grow. So we're excited about the Virginia regional presence that we've made there. That's one form of acquisition. The next form, of course, is accretive deals with other compatible businesses and cultures, and most importantly, cultures. It's not just a financial transaction for us. And as I mentioned, the past two calls, we've been in more discussions the past year than probably in the past five previous years, and that's in part due to our increased visibility. As much as I like the organic growth, and we've had also markets at our back, we know we want to execute on that strategy and get closer to our clients and or build out our presence in the New York area. And I would expect for the next period of time that there will be action on that side. We haven't done a deal in a couple of years. It's not unusual for us. We do them every 2 to 3. But given the level of discussions, as I mentioned previously, given our growth strategy, that may be something of a story for Silvercrest over the next year.
Got it. That's helpful. Just one last question. Any color or commentary on sort of the strategies that may have driven the performance fees in the fourth quarter, and then just how you're thinking about the potential going forward?
So we never count on performance fees. We never budget for them because obviously they come and go with markets. The strategy responsible for most of those fees is a high-yield municipal strategy that currently has in the ballpark maybe just north of 6% yield. And I think it's about close to a 10-year duration, somewhere in that ballpark. It's a very specialized strategy that is going into essential services in communities, and it uses no leverage, unlike many of its competitors. Given the low yield environment, that's been a very attractive strategy, and it's one that relies on superb bottom-up fundamental credit analysis, which our team has proven to be quite good at. They are buying bonds at a discount. They're often not followed or covered. So that strategy is pretty unique to the firm. The flows into that strategy from elsewhere in the firm have been meaningful as a result of the yield it's providing. And given the nice yield, there's always a potential, and discount to value, there's always a potential for increase in the underlying bond value, and that's precisely what happened last year. I think it was up. That strategy was up, depending on what vehicle you look at, but let's just call it 15% or thereabouts. So that's where they came from. It's been a consistent provider of performance fees, but like any strategy, you never quite know.
Got it. Thanks for taking all my other questions.
You're welcome.
No problem.
Thank you. And again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press star, then one on your touch-tone telephone.
Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate you joining the call.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This does conclude the program, and you may all disconnect.